It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. You want to watch the show? We are on YouTube on the 106.7 The Fan page, streaming live even on the road. You want to listen to us on the move? If you're out of the area, the Odyssey app's the best way to do so. We are all over DC and the DMV on 106.7, our flagship, and we are live in Richmond on AM 910 FM 105.1. So you can enjoy the program by all kinds of different platforms. We appreciate you guys making the show part of your day. We're taking you up to 6:30 tonight. Jay Gruden at 5 in 1 hour. Logan Paulson at 6 in 2 hours as we get you ready for the Bengals hosting the Commanders on Monday Night Football. Quick detour for just a second. We have not talked about this yet. This will get a lot more time probably come Wednesday on the show. We have been majoring, as we should, in the Commanders ahead of a significant game tonight with the Bengals. But over the weekend, C.J. Abrams was sent to the minor leagues by the Washington Nationals, not because of where he was, but because he was out all night long. He was seen leaving a casino in Chicago at about 8 in the morning, reportedly. The allegation was that he essentially walked out of the casino in the morning, and then, by way of when you would normally get to a day game, 105 local time game, basically went straight to Wrigley Field. That became public. It was just a tweet that had circulated online. Nobody really knew if it was true or not. Everyone kind of forgot about it, I think, as the game was played. The next day you wake up, and before first pitch, the Nationals had demoted C.J. Abrams, optioned him to the minor leagues, very, very obviously sending a message to the young man, Abrams himself at 23 years old, and to the team to say, not in the big leagues. What do you want to be? How do you want to proceed forward? You have a chance to potentially be a superstar, but you've had a really poor second half of the season, and in this lost year now as a club, you're staying out all night before we have a day game, which is unheard of at the big league level, even as guys burn the candle on both ends. I was texting with a couple of current players, former players, and they said, look, guys go out, they have drinks. There are even guys on teams that party pretty hard during the season. You will never hear about somebody being out all night long before a day game. It just doesn't happen. The Nationals decided this was a chance to really try to get C.J. Abrams to fall in line.
Yeah, there's, and some people ask, why not just suspend him for a couple of games or fine him or whatever? There's CBA rules, I'm sure, in place that had something to do with it, but I think the message here is incredibly clear. This is not how a major leaguer behaves. So we're going to take you away, the major leagues away from you, right? This is not what you're supposed to do. This is not what a professional is supposed to do, and there are team rules about it. This is a clear violation. We don't know if this was the first time, the only time. We don't know. The only thing that's become public, as you said, is that one tweet that we now kind of are led to believe that's exactly how it went down and what happened or something close to that. So good for the team, honestly. I mean, there have been a number of things that have frustrated me over the years with them, as much as I like Davey Martinez and a lot of people in this organization, where some of the same high school level antics on the field, I don't mean like temper tantrums, guys throwing their helmets, I mean guys getting picked off, throwing to the wrong base, getting tagged out, or in some of these cartoonish and buffoonish ways, Bad News Bear style, hasn't been fixed. There's only so much you could do with that. You practice whenever you can kind of fit it in at the start of a road trip or first day home coming back from the road. You work on stuff here and there, but it's harder to correct those sorts of things. Behavioral stuff like this is controllable, fixable. You know, this is being a professional. You saw it with Luis Garcia previously, where they had a heart-to-heart with him. They said, you got a chance to be a second baseman here for a long time. You're out of shape. This is not okay. Your behavior away from the field is affecting what happens here. This is a similar situation, something controllable from Abrams, and they took a pretty hard stance. So I applaud them for it, honestly.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, and it wasn't a lot of people, but by how many people vocally told me they didn't like the Nationals doing this. The argument being made was, he's a grown-up. When you're not at work, your employees should have no control over what you do. I kind of thought about that a little bit, and I said, well, I'm normally the guy that says let's not compare pro sports to the real world. But if we're going to do that for a second, I have a hard time believing that in most jobs, if you rolled into work looking, feeling, smelling like, potentially, you know, allegedly, the night before, and your performance was not at the level of expectation, that your company would do nothing about that. Now, if he was batting 400 since the All-Star break and was on his way to, you know, a second half that was as good as the first half, would this have happened over the weekend? Maybe not. You know, probably not. But I think there is probably a direct link to this happening and the fact that it hasn't gone very well in the second half of the season for an ultra-talented player. I also, and I don't know anything specifically, but I don't think the Nationals would have sent him to the minor leagues if this was a one-off that shocked them, where C.J. Abrams, who normally does everything exactly how they want and doesn't burn the candle at both ends and isn't out and about and carrying on, if this was the first time they'd ever heard about him doing something that they went, huh, we don't love that, I'm just going to assume that their immediate response wouldn't have been to send him to the minor leagues. My guess is this was perhaps the straw that broke the camel's back or some lifetime achievement award. But 14% of people, 86%, said that they thought what the Nationals did was perfectly fine. 14%, I posted a poll on Twitter with about 4,000 votes, said that they didn't like it, that they thought it was an overstep by the Nationals. And I just disagree. I not only agree with what they did, I kind of applaud it.
Me too.
Because they have such a young team and a young clubhouse. And I remember, Danny, who would it have been? When Jason Wirth kind of ran the clubhouse. And they had good guys like Ryan Zimmerman. But I remember like Anthony Rendon and some of the young players at that time, Bryce Harper, getting called up. And you would see how Jason Wirth did things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how you did things. So years after Jason Wirth, who was a really unprofessional at times to deal with for you and I as just media guys, had left, Anthony Rendon was still doing some of the same gimmicks. He was still doing some of the same bits that Jason Wirth used to do. Whereas if you come up in a clubhouse where everybody is just a pro and where the culture is, hey, the media has a job to do. Let's be respectful. Let's not bang things next to them so that their audio doesn't work or, you know, curse loudly when they're talking to the guy next to me. Now, let's do things the right way in a good clubhouse. Then maybe they would have operated differently. And in this case, I think if you just see a guy like, oh, the best player on our team who's kind of the face of our franchise, even though he's only 23 years old, which, newsflash, maybe this is a note to ownership that you might want to go sign a veteran or two. But he goes out at night. He parties. This is okay. No. The Nats are saying absolutely not. And I don't think James Wood or Dylan Cruz are that kind of guy that's going to be out all night anyway. But I just think it's an important message for the team and specifically for CJ to say, dude, you have a golden opportunity. You're one of the few guys in the sport who has a chance to hit 30 homers and steal 50 bases at the peak of your powers. Please prioritize baseball. And I think that's what they're trying to get through.
Yeah, a couple of things just to piggyback. Number one, it's a team rule. So whether you think it's a good rule, a bad rule, or anything in between, it's a team rule. So that to me is a non-starter for the what he does away from the field is his own business. Number two, it is pro sports, and it is kind of a different animal. And what I would say, and the story that jumped into my mind was years ago, there was an incident, ended up everyone was okay, but remember former then Redskins running back Evan Royster, right? Local guy, went to Penn State, whatever. He was involved in something. It was nondescript. It wasn't that big a deal. There were multiple people involved. But what was the story? Redskins running back Evan Royster among those ... right? Sorry. With the recognition of being a Washington National, of being a professional baseball player that people pay money to come see, there is an extra layer of responsibility that, you know, that Billy the municipal worker doesn't have. That's part of it. That's part of the contract. If nobody cared, you could live in anonymity. You could play tiddlywinks. But you make a lot of money playing professional baseball. There is notoriety and a level of please don't embarrass us or the franchise, even away from the field, that I think is a perfectly reasonable responsibility or ask of a professional athlete, right? So that's embarrassing for the Nationals. Right, they're not having a great season by wins and losses. You and I are, I think, pretty pleased.
It ended up on the bottom line, by the way.
But that's my point, is the look is a bad one. It looks unprofessional. We can't have that. We're not the butt of jokes. We're trying to build something here, so a message needed to be sent.
To me, this was a Mike Rizzo move.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, this seemed, just from an outside looking in, that is a Rizzo, like, I'm sure Davey got a phone call at some point, but that's just Rizzo. It reeked of... Do you remember when our buddy, Sean Kelly, who was a great guy,
Yep.
Had that terrible game. He got brought in when they were down like 20 runs or something, and he gave up a three-run home run. Maybe they were up by a lot. I don't remember.
They were up by a bunch, and he spiked his glove.
That's right. I think they were up like 19 runs. And he gave up a three-run home run. It was like 24 to something, and he threw his glove or hat down. He like launched it off the mound, and he got brought out of the game, and immediately the rumor was him and Rizzo got into it in the clubhouse yelling at each other, and then he was DFA'd basically the next day, if I remember the story correctly.
Just about, yeah.
There have been those along the way where that happens, or the perception is that Brandon Kinstler leaked something in a story and he's gone. This felt like a, I don't tolerate this. Not up here. Not at the big league level, man. This is not A ball. This is not college baseball. This is not, we're going to tell you one more time not to do something. It just seemed to me like they said, you know what? I know you're heating up. I know you're getting out of your slump. He was hitting 417 with an 1120 OPS in the week before they sent him down. So this was not performance-based by any means. And I'm with you on Luis Garcia. You know, 1 year ago, 12 months ago, he was in AAA after Rizzo at that time, went on the junkies and said he needs to lose weight, he needs to prepare, all the stuff you went through.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it was they saw the tweet. It crossed their desks one way or the other. They did their investigation, whether that meant going right to Abrams and talking to him or trying to – who knows if they – did they get a camera? I don't know if they confirmed how late he was out. But I doubt it was just off of a tweet without talking to anybody. Clearly, they put in the legwork, found out it happened, and then they sent him down. And here's how you know how mad they were. There's no games to be played in. He didn't go down to play in the minor leagues and continue to play baseball. The season's over. There was one AAA game left, so he reported immediately to West Palm Beach, to their facility where we go to spring training, so that he could just work out with a bunch of minor league guys in the event that like eight Nationals get hurt in the next 3 days and they need reinforcements. So his season is over, and they basically just said, you don't have to go home, but you got to get out of here.
Right. You, this is not what a major league player does, so you are not a major leaguer. That is as strong a message as you can send.
Does not change how I feel long-term about Abrams.
Same here, by the way.
I love CJ's game. Really doesn't change how I feel about him in any way, even in the short term, other than to say it makes me wonder, has baseball always been, will it be, going into the offseason, like clearly the number one priority? Is there some perception with the front office maybe that you know he didn't put enough effort and focus into the game throughout the season? I don't know. But this is going to go one of two ways. We are at a crossroads now.
Mm-hmm.
He is either going to take this slap in the face like a love tap and realize, I got a golden opportunity. Am I going to be $150 million, $200 million shortstop, signing a mega contract? I'm only 23, I was an all-star, and I got a great skill set. Or am I going to be a year-to-year guy because I never max out, I'm just pretty good, and people have questions about me? So if you take this well and you use it as motivation, like Garcia did, who came back and had a career year, then it's going to be a great thing for him and the team. If it goes poorly and he decides they wronged him, they made him look bad publicly, it could spoil a relationship that we're all hoping continues with an extension. So this is a real crossroads moment for him in his career, I think.
100% correct about that, Grant. I think that's very well said. There, you know, I understand how we got here, too, by the way, because I think you said it very well, and I would echo that. Doesn't change how long-term I feel about C.J. Abrams, or even right now how I feel. This is a mistake. That's what this is. If you handed me, in my early 20s, the keys to a major league franchise, I've already been an all-star, I'm the face of this thing, and everybody's taking my picture, and I'm signing autographs, and kids are telling me how great I am, and you know everybody's coming to see me and cheering, I might make some bad decisions. My head might be a little bit full. I might think that this can never go away, or that I've already arrived, or I've done it. You might have one of these moments, right, where you make a poor decision, which it seems like C.J. Abrams did. I don't know how habitual it is or is not. I've heard rumors like everybody else. I just would say this. This is an opportunity. It's going to be. He's going to be mad, be frustrated, be ticked off for a little while. That's good. Now what are you going to do about it, right? You got punched in the nose. This is your chance to either come back stronger and have this be, remember that moment, remember that crossroads moment, or it can be the thing that derails you.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. We are broadcasting live in the tri-state area near Cincinnati today, where we're going to the Commanders and the Bengals tonight. We're heading out of here in about 2 hours. Game time is about 4 hours away. We're excited for football. And we want to start diving into this matchup in more detail. So let's do that next. We will pull up the projections, over-under totals, individually and statistically. Props for players, and we're going to jump on one side or the other. Play a little Commanders over-under next on G&D.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan, where we are broadcasting live ahead of Monday Night Football. We're in Lawrenceburg, Indiana at the Sportsbook Hollywood Casino. You can check out the game if you're in the tri-state area. You can enjoy their sports options all football season long. Excellent food delivered by a robot.
I'm looking at it right now.
More importantly, if you are here, you got to come tell our guy, Thommy, who runs this year's sportsbook, that you are listeners of the Grant and Danny Radio program. By the way, throughout all of their primetime Monday Night Football games all year long, $3 for burgers during games and $1 wings. So I don't know if I'll find myself back in Cincinnati this football season, but if I do,
it's almost worth it just to come.
Yeah, exactly.
For that.
Pretty good. But we are enjoying the hospitality here. Jay Gruden's on the show at 5 coming up in a half hour. Logan Paulson stops by at 6 coming up in 90 minutes on the Fan. But we'll bring producer Darius Dameron into the fold because, as we do each and every week before football games, we're going to go through some of the individual player props, play a little over-under. The way this normally works is Darius gives us the projected line for each player. Danny says they're going to go under that if they're a Commander. And I often go on either side of the fence. And that's kind of how the segment works.
That is pretty clear. That's pretty much how it goes. I go over
Thom,
rushing yards for
Thom
stuff.
Tom just said nothing's changed.
No, well, I mean, I get most of them right. But I go over in rushing yards for this rushing offense, but under in throwing yards. And, again, I just hit every one of them.
With that said, Dad.
Love you, Dad.
Love you, Dad.
Love you, Dad. Let's start with the quarterbacks. How about it?
Quarterback.
Jaden Daniels, they have the over-under set at 194.5 passing yards. Over-under, boys.
So we predicted his line earlier today. I had him at 210. I like that I'm kind of in line with the experts on this, in a sense. I think there's some garbage time production as they're down. I'm looking at a backdoor cover in this game. 20 of 30 for 210, a little over 7 yards per attempt is what I'm envisioning. So I will go over that 190 and change.
As an under, it'll be around 155, 160 today. I think it'll be a struggle throwing the football.
Let's go to the other quarterback. The quarterback on the other side.
Over.
Former Pro Bowler Joe Burrow. They have it set at 261.5.
Does Joe Burrow play quarterback in the NFL?
He does.
Is he playing Washington's defense?
He is.
The answer is over. This is an over situation. They can't cover me, let alone good players. This is an over.
Lest we forget, Baker Mayfield looked like Baker Manning. Four touchdowns, no picks in week one. Threw for nearly 300 yards. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin got off. And then last week with the Giants, Malik Nabers went ham sandwich. And he's really, really good. You give him 16 targets, he's going to make you look bad. But Daniel Jones had one of those get-right games.
Yes, he did.
That we're familiar with against Washington. I think he goes over as well. T. Higgins is back. Ja'Marr Chase has been whisper quiet, library-level volume for him. I just don't see how this Benjamin St. Juice-led secondary finds the answer to shut those guys down. Now, I will say, this is big. This is huge news.
Oh.
We don't know if Emmanuel Forbes is going to play or not, but he is questionable at this point.
He
right?
certainly is, and he's got an injury. Come on!
And
having a good time.
Emmanuel Forbes does play in this game, it changes absolutely nothing as far as I'm concerned, as far as Washington secondary. So that is an over for Joey Burrow.
Let's continue with the passing game, but we're going to go to the receiving side. I believe there's a guy that we call wide receiver one. His name's Terry McLaurin. He hasn't done much so far, but they have his prop set at 51.5.
That's
what do we say, over or under?
I'm going to say over that. Cincinnati's defense is fine. I don't know that their pass rush is going to be great. I think they're going to get 3, 4, 5 sacks, whatever, but it's not going to be constant harassment. It's not like Jaden Daniels will never have time. I think Hendrickson will have a couple of sacks. I think Terry has one of those volume games where it's not a lot of yards, which is kind of now what it's been the last couple of years. But I'll say like 7 catches for 59 yards or something like that, and he goes over that number. How many weeks in a row, if you're Cliff Kingsbury, do you want to be asked, why is Terry McLaurin not making more plays? Why isn't he involved? Last week, everything they threw him was behind the line of scrimmage, essentially, other than one slant. They got to push the ball down the field. Hell, if he catches one ball for like 24 yards on just a dig and
that'll
run.
That'll be a season high.
Well, not only that, but my point is you're halfway to the number, so I'm going to go over.
Under. I do think he goes past his season total in receiving yards, which is 39 through two games. Oh, my God, to that is my quick side. I think he goes for about 45 yards. I think it's a 7-catch, 45-yard day for McLaurin.
For reference, the Bengals' passing game through 2 weeks is ranked number one, only allowing 128.5 yards per game. But, of course, they did play New England week
they
one,
did,
so that
yes.
kind of helps. Mm-hmm. Let's continue with the Commanders receiving core. Zach Ertz, 24.5 receiving yards, over under.
I like the slide over here. I think he catches and falls 4 passes for 32 yards. Give me the over for Ertz.
So I hammer this over. The McLaurin over, I don't feel as nearly as good about as this. Like, I would say Terry McLaurin going over, I'm leaning that way. I wouldn't put money on it. Ertz, this is actually a bet I'll make going into the game. He is their number one guy in the passing game. It goes through him, especially in the middle of the field in that 15 to 20 range. He's the only guy Daniels has thrown the ball downfield to at all. I mean, the other thing close to a downfield throw would have been the end of game in route, that dig to Noah Brown where there was just nobody defending him. But otherwise, throwing the ball 15 plus, 20 yards downfield, it's been Ertz twice in two games. That's it. So this is an over big time for your boy.
Since there's no other receivers that catch passes for the Commanders, let's do the running backs receiving props. Got Brian Robinson over under 11.5 receiving yards.
Over. Easy over for me. They keep doing this. They keep setting it at these tiny, paltry totals. This is who is going to be catching passes. Brian Robinson, Austin Eckler. These are the overs. This is what I've hit each of the first 2 weeks. I will hit it again in week number three. Brian Robinson will catch 2 screens for 14, 15 yards. This is another over.
I'll say over at this point. I think my answer is going to be over on their running back receiving yards every single week. And eventually, you know, that's not how you win all your bets. I just don't see a formula where they don't get those catches. It's going to happen, but every single week going into the game, to me, their best path forward, one of the things they're going to try to do, one of the things Jaden Daniels is going to be successful at, will be getting the ball to Eckler Robinson by design or just checking it down. So over for him, and I feel even better about an Eckler over in receiving yards. I don't know what that total is.
Well, Eckler's total would be set at 18.5, so I think we're feeling good about that.
Yeah,
all
so
around.
To me, a parlay on Ertz over 25 and Eckler over 19 is winner, winner, chicken dinner. That's where your boy's feeling really good. Danny, 19, Eckler?
Oh, well over. This is an easy one. Sorry, I chimed in earlier and was like, that's an easy one, that's an over. This is what's happening. They're throwing to running backs. Those running backs will go over those totals.
I'm getting late breaking news here. There is another receiver prop. Noah Brown. He has a prop set at 18.5. What do we think?
That's a trickier one. I'm going to say over because that's a comically low total. I do think he catches three passes for, 35 yards, somewhere in there.
Over, for sure. Now, I've gone with a lot of overs, I'm noticing.
Yeah, you're predicting them to win, offensive explosion.
I'm not predicting them to win, obviously, or to explode on offense. Only 210 yards. But I guess if Terry gets 60 and Ertz gets 50, 110, and I've got over for the running backs, let's say Eckler has 40, 150, Robinson has 30, 25, 160. So this all plays out. I mean, there's no one else that catches passes.
That's true.
So I'll say over for Noah Brown. With all due respect, Ya'Ami Brown under. With all due respect to Olamide Zaccheaus under. These are the guys that will go over.
Let's try the Bengals receivers here. They have Ja'Marr Chase at 79.5.
Over. This is a first half over. He will blow past that total. They have no one that can cover him. He has struggled through two games. He will not struggle through three games. He's going to have a monster energy drink evening.
79 and a hook. Ja'Marr Chase, 35 yards last week against the Chiefs, 62 yards in week one against the Patriots. That is a big jump. I'll say over as well. I think T. Higgins gets him going. Higgins being back means you can't bracket and double him.
All right, let's move our way over to the rushing props. Jaden Daniels, they have his rushing prop set at 48.5.
That's a big time over. I got him going for twice that tonight.
Under for me, I think Cincinnati's going to be concerned about it and try to limit it, and they will be successful doing so. I think he runs for right around 35, 40 yards.
Cincinnati's 31st ranked rushing defense, will they be able to stop Brian Robinson, who has a prop set at 55.5 rushing yards?
I will oddly say under on this. I think part of the reason why I'm going so heavy on the Jaden Daniels rushing is the Bengals load up. This means that he can't rip anything off. He had two 30-plusers last week, remember? First two of his career had a 40-plus yard run as well. We don't see him do that very often. I think it's like 14 for 46 or something like that, and it's the Jaden Daniels show.
I like a slight under there. That's right around the total, so it's funny that these professional people that do this for a living have this is right around the number. But I thought he'd be just over 50 yards, so I'm going to say a slight under here because I think that's the focal point for Cincinnati.
Pardon me, that was the 29th ranked rush defense for the Bengals. It'll be 18.5 rushing yards for Austin Eckler is the prop.
Over again. He's good. People keep sleeping on this. Austin Eckler is going to get receiving yards and rush yards. He'll be over on both counts.
I will say under on Eckler, and it's basically based on usage. I don't have a whole lot of reason to think they're going to give him many carries. I could see it being a 3 or 4 carry game for him. So I'll say under. I think they want to throw him the football for sure, but they haven't really shown much of an inclination to involve him with any heavy-duty workload on the ground.
And the Bengals have the 31st ranked rushing offense. They have Zach Moss set for 48.5 rushing yard prop.
I like the under on that one. Washington, when they put their mind to it, can actually do a decent job against running backs. Look at week number one, held Rashad Wright in check in the running game. Look, Irvin was more comfortable. But anyway, Rashad Wright didn't run it great. I think they'll do okay against Zach Moss and company, but they will be shredded by the passing game.
Over. They're going to try to compensate for a lack of talent on the back end and try to drop some DBs to help confuse Joe Burrow and zone him up, and I think they get chewed up on the ground with some light boxes as the game goes on. Plus, game script tells me Bengals will have the lead. He'll get to pound the football, so he'll go over that.
All right, that'll do it, boys.
We love it. That is a little over, or in Danny's case, under.
Under,
as
all
it
right.
were. Commander's projections for Week 3 and Monday Night Football against the Bengals. You're listening to The Fan. We're taking you up to kickoff tonight. We got a pregame show when we are done. Next, what will we be saying if Washington stuns Cincinnati? What are we going to be saying if they lose and they're sitting at 1-2 going into next week at Arizona? This is G&D.
No, I haven't talked to him recently. I wish him nothing but the best in his success over in Cincinnati, what he's done so far, what he did for the state of Louisiana. So it's big for the whole state of Louisiana to see both of us go up against each other on Monday night.
That's Jaden Daniels, who is ready for his Monday night spotlight tonight against Joe Burrow. Just a couple of guys who are LSU Tiger, Heisman Trophy winning, elite quarterbacks over the last handful of years.
Just 100 tutties combined between those guys.
I know that the biggest reason why the Commanders get the Monday night spotlight this early in the season is Daniels. But I got to think that was the whole idea, right? It's the just
the LSU Bowl,
the mirror of seeing this as one of the great programs in America where the two great quarterbacks have come out of over the last few seasons. Burrow, in some ways, whether it was direct or indirect, a mentor of Jaden Daniels in that sense. That's going to be the angle on the broadcast. It's got to be what led to this matchup tonight. We were driving around today. In fact, we were passing Paul Brown Paycor Stadium on one of the bridges downtown in the tri-state area. And we're like, man, how weird is it that Washington was chosen to be on Monday Night Football in week three so that people could see them? And it's such a Jaden Daniels thing. It's a win for them from that perspective. But this really is Daniels and Burrow from a national selling point.
Without a doubt. And you could see it, right? I mean, the I know he's from with a different network now, but the Tom Rinaldi-style pregame piece writes itself here, where it's like two different stories, two different journeys, one destination. And then it's like, you know, highlights intermingled and everybody's story. Both guys had to transfer. Both guys were, you know, in Burrow's case was beaten out by somebody else at a different school. It took, a second chance to thrive. And here they are, both Heisman Trophy winning quarterbacks that turned into a couple of the great college seasons over the last 100 years for the LSU Tigers. So, and here they are meeting on Monday night, kind of the guy that's done it at a pretty damn high level over a few years in the NFL, and Burrow, working back from injury, obviously, hasn't quite hit his stride just yet, and a dude that's hoping to walk in his footsteps.
What will people back home in D.C. be saying tomorrow when we land if they beat the Bengals as opposed to if the Commanders lose? Maybe we could get into whether it matters how they lose if the expectation plays out tonight. But we're going to be at the game in the stadium. There are diehard fans that will get the immediate temperature of right as things are happening wearing their burgundy and gold on the road tonight. But I want to dive into like the difference in how this team will be viewed. So if they win, and at that point you're 2-1 with a shocker of a victory, not only because the Bengals are better than you, you're a huge underdog, but it was a primetime game where over the years it hasn't gone very well. I think it's almost regardless of how Jaden Daniels plays, assuming he's healthy for all four quarters in a win, it's the beginning of a celebration in town about Daniels, maybe first. And second, nationally, the drum's starting to be beaten off in the distance of him as the rookie of the year. Like, that's what we're going to start getting.
The phrase that comes to mind is, it really is different. It's not just part-time different. It's not just lip service different. It's not just, hey, we're doing a new thing this year where we're trying this out. We're going to take care of customers. No. The tide is turning. It's a real difference. It doesn't mean Super Bowl this year. It doesn't mean anything crazy. You know, a lot of the God bless them, the crazy fans will just simply say, you know, the instant they get a first down that this is the year. But it just means that you're no longer the embarrassment. You're no longer the investigation team. You're no longer the owner allegedly committing the crimes team or whatever. You're no longer the punching bag of the NFL. You are now one of the people that belongs. It counts. The whole country saw you play well. The tide is turning, and it's real because, A, we have a general manager. We have an ownership group that gets it and is actively trying to make this hellhole better. And you have a quarterback, which is, again, a for-real thing. And really, the whole way, it's the key to being one of these relevant football teams, not just for a week or a month, but for a while.
It's big because it changes my eyeline of the team.
Yeah.
How good do I think this team is? How capable are they? Not only in winning any one individual game, but just achieving as the year goes on. It changes the whole game for me in that regard. Like, specific to next week at Arizona, they're 4.5-point dogs on the look-ahead line. You beat the Bengals, that's going to change. That line's going to tighten. But I think, why can't you go to Arizona and beat a Cardinals team that just lost to Detroit fairly handily this past week at home? I think the same thing about the Browns game. Mm-hmm. Right now, that feels like maybe the Browns will be favored by a point or two even in Landover, Maryland. But you beat Cincinnati, the better team in that division that's going to whoop up on the Browns this year, and I'm going, why shouldn't you be expected to win that? I think a victory over the Bengals, you're ahead of schedule. I had you at 1-2 at best. Some people may have had you at 0-3. You're 2-1. Now you start to say they're going to hit the over on any win projection this year. This is not a
6.5's in jeopardy.
Right. This isn't a 5 or 6-win team. This is a 7-8-win team. Mm-hmm. Now you're another win away from starting to dream on 9 and competing for the wild card. So
right.
People will get ahead of themselves more than we should because it's so early. But a win over a Bengals team that a lot of people think can play for an AFC championship game this year, under the lights with everybody watching, it just, I think it is a announcement that you have arrived in a sense as like not being terrible. It is a
absolutely
way to send the message, we're not a pushover this year. And this would be the way to do it tonight.
100%. And the opportunity's there. It's always there in these primetime games. And again, Washington's come up beyond small. It's not just like they've lost a primetime game. It's always something that you've never seen before. The greatest offensive game in Bears history, numbers approximate, occurs on Thursday Night Football at your expense when the whole country's watching on Prime. It's been the story. You know them all. You know the embarrassments. We don't no need to run through them. But those are the things that leave those lasting perceptions for so many fans across the country. For us, it's another game, another loss. You guys are watching all 17 of them as fans of the club. So they don't stick out in the same way to you, right? But to the country, it's like the one glimpse you get at somebody, and this is the foible, this is the whoopsie-daisy that you experience. Yeah, it's going to leave a mark, I think. So you change those kinds of perceptions with big-time performances in a game like tonight.
Flip side is I just don't think there's a ton on the line if you lose competitively. Or just lose respectfully, you know. Mm-hmm. If you put forth a respectable effort and are solid in a loss, there's really nothing going home that I feel different about. You're not really supposed to win. It's one of those games.
Yep.
There's a lot to be gained. There's not a whole lot to lose. As long as it's not awful. And if it's awful, then you feel like it's a little bit of the same old nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of going back to week one with Tampa. That wasn't that long ago how embarrassing and, frankly, just like disappointing that game was, where it just left that awful taste in your mouth. If they play really bad, they turn the ball over, they can't throw the ball, they give up five sacks, you know, Joe Burrow throws for 350 and both receivers go for 100 and they give up 40 points or whatever, then you beat the Giants, who aren't any good. This is going to be a really long year, and we are a long, long ways in this town from being able to talk about this team through any lens of wild card, right? I think that is the reaction, fair or not. If you lay another egg for the second time in 3 weeks against a decent team.
Yeah, to me it's the egg laying part, right? I think how matters a ton for how I'll view it, certainly. I think, and a lot of fans too, right? I mean, what a lot of people have said, whether it's with their behavior, a.k.a. buying stuff or buying in, watching, talking to us, whatever, you get this vibe. There's a lot of wait and see, right? We've been promised, different people have made the promises, but we've been promised how different things are going to be a billion times before. And so far, you had, as you said, one pretty embarrassing opening after a lot of offseason hype, and you beat the Giants without scoring a touchdown. It's not as if this has been, you know, some sort of Saints-like renaissance where you're scoring 45 points a week, you know, just killing people through a couple of games, you know? And there's a feeling of, yeah, they're not ready yet, it's not a particularly good team, and I'll let you know when I believe in them again. Well, this is how you build belief. This is how you build the engagement with a fan base, right? You show well, even if you don't win. The embarrassment part just, it makes people check out. It makes people disinterested. It's not fun. You know, if you're in a competitive game and you lose, sure, it stinks. It's annoying, and you hate losing just because you're a fan of sports. But there's some takeaways. There are things to build on. When you get destroyed like they did in week one, what are we building on? You know, like, what was the – yeah, the defense sure as hell can't stop anybody, and the offense couldn't pass for three quarters. All right, see you guys next week. That's not exciting. So how it happens tonight, win, lose, or draw, I think is enormous. Just, again, building some credibility.
Let's talk game script with Jay Gruden next, and maybe a formula for Washington to try to win this game against Cincinnati. Can they replicate New England's plan, controlling the football, taking the air out of the ball by running a lot of plays, long time of possession drives, not turning the football over, those types of kind of boring but effective strategies? We'll talk to Jay Gruden next. Logan Paulson just over an hour from now on Grant and Danny.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.